We're ready to go. So it's Monday, December 8th, 2025, and we're studying the topic of diligently seeking God. And we're in Hebrews 11. Last week, we spent a lot of time looking at Jacob, and this time we're going to focus on Joseph, but Jacob will be included in this, as well as Abraham and Isaac, because we want to look at the thing that it says in Hebrews 11 about Joseph, and look at some of the other things that are connected to that. So we're going to be in Hebrews 11, verse 22, where it says, by faith, or by believing, Joseph, when he died, made mention of the departing of the children of Israel, and gave commandment concerning his bones. Okay? This is enough of a big deal that it's mentioned in this chapter here, so we have to look at the background of this and why it's important. So it's by faith, and pretty much everyone that's mentioned here in Hebrews 11 did something by faith, something by believing. They did it because God told them to do it. They just didn't do it because they felt like it. They did it because God told them to do it. He spoke to them in words and told them what to do or told them what to say. And Joseph, what he did by believing here is he made mention of the departing of the children of Israel. The Greek word translated departing is Exodus, interestingly enough. When they did the Septuagint Greek translation of the Old Testament, they called the second book of Moses Exodus because it concerns the departing of the children of Israel from Egypt. And this is where they got that title of the book. So Joseph made mention of the departing of the children of Israel long before it happened and long before it seemed like there would be a need even for it to happen. But the reason why he mentioned it is because he did it by faith. He did it because God told him to do it, and he believed what God said regarding the departing of the children of Israel, and he gave commandment concerning his bones. So Joseph, he believed. He was a believer. He believed the things that God had revealed to his fathers. He believed the things that he knew God had said to Abraham, even though he wasn't there at the time. But he would have heard about it from his father, Jacob. Joseph didn't have any contact with Abraham, and he may have had a little bit of contact with Isaac. But he had a lot of contact with Jacob, because he was born when Jacob was an old man, and his sons were doing a lot of the work of taking care of the sheep and all that. So Jacob had some time that he could spend with Joseph, and he became Jacob's favorite. Now, go to Psalm 105. We had read part of this before, and I want to read it again and a little more of it. But Psalm 105 is the psalm that mentions Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as prophets. Okay? They were prophets because God spoke to them, revealed things to them, and then they spoke on God's behalf to other people. Most of those other people that they spoke with were their own family, and their family listened to them because they were the heads of the family when they spoke to them. But starting in verse 4, it says, seek the Lord and his strength, seek his face forevermore. And that's what we're interested in this study here, seeking God, seeking his face. Remember his marvelous works that he hath done, his wonders, and the judgments of his mouth. And remembering is a big part of believing, okay? To believe God in the present, we need to remember what God has said previously, as well as what he might be saying right now, okay? With Joseph, he remembered what God had revealed to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob when he talked about the departing of the children of Israel from Egypt. And he also had information or wisdom that God had been giving him along the way. But verse 6 says, O ye seed of Abraham, his servant, ye children of Jacob, his chosen, he is the Lord our God. His judgments are in all the earth. Look at verse 6 again. O seed of Abraham, his servant. That's what God called his prophets. his servants. Remember, Moses, my servant, is dead. Moses, the servant of the Lord. Abraham was God's servant. That means God told him to do things, and he did them. And he would do whatever God told him to do. So Abraham was a servant. Jacob was his chosen. Jacob was chosen above his brother Esau, if you remember that. Verse 7, he is the Lord our God. His judgments are in all the earth, where there's Jews or Gentiles or the church of God at this point. But at the time it was written, it was either Jews or Gentiles. Verse 8, he hath remembered his covenant forever, the word which he commanded to 1,000 generations, which covenant he made with Abraham and his oath unto Isaac, and confirmed the same unto Jacob for a law and to Israel for an everlasting covenant, saying, unto thee will I give the land of Canaan, the lot of your inheritance. We're going to be looking at some of those incidents where God told them that. When they were but a few men in number, yea, very few and strangers in it, when they went from one nation to another, from one kingdom to another people, he suffered or allowed no man to do them wrong. Yea, he reproved kings for their sakes, saying, touch not mine anointed, and do my prophets no harm. Okay? Prophets are among the categories of people that are considered anointed of God. Kings are anointed, priests are anointed, and prophets are anointed. And generally, it would be the prophet that would, on God's behalf, anoint the kings or the priests. Moreover, he called for a famine upon the land. He brake the whole staff of bread, that seven-year famine in the days of Jacob. He sent a man before them, even Joseph, who was sold for a servant as a slave, whose feet they hurt with fetters. He was laid in iron until the time that his word came. The word of the Lord tried him. And that word tried means that it proved him. When Joseph received revelation and communicated that with other people, it proved to others that he was a man of God, that he was a wise man who could receive information from God himself. And it refers to that incident when he interpreted the dream for Pharaoh, because it says, the king sent and loosed him, even the ruler of the people, and let him go free, and made him lord of his house and ruler of all his substance, to bind his princes at his pleasure and teach senators wisdom. Israel also came into Egypt, and Jacob sojourned in the land of Ham. That's not the food. That was one of the three sons of Noah. Remember Shem, Ham, and Japheth? Africa was the land of Ham. Okay, so let's take a look at some of these things. We're going to look at God speaking of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob inheriting this land, or their seed inheriting this land, God promising it to them and giving it to them. And the first mention of this is in Genesis 12, in verse 7. God had already spoken to Abraham and called him out from Ur of the Chaldees, and he was in Haran for a little while, and then went into the land of Canaan. And while he was there, in verse 7, it says, and the Lord appeared unto Abram and said, unto thy seed will I give this land. And there builded he an altar unto the Lord who appeared unto him. So this is the first time God mentions this to Abram, but he will mention it again to Abram a number of times, and to Isaac, and to Jacob. In chapter 13, this is after he went down into Egypt with Sarah and with Lot, and Sarah was taken by the king, and God plagued the king of Egypt until he would release Sarah, and they left there with a lot of wealth. And in chapter 13, starting in verse 14, Abraham and Lot have so much livestock now that they can't stay with each other. They have too many. They have to separate. And they did. And in verse 14, it says, the Lord said unto Abram, after that Lot was separated from him, lift up now thine eyes and look from the place where thou art, northward and southward and eastward and westward, all directions. For all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever. That's a little more information that it's going to be forever. And I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can number the dust of the earth, then shall thy seed also be numbered. Arise, walk through the land and the length of it and the breadth of it, for I will give it unto thee. Okay? So he's expanding on what he's promising at this point. In chapter 15, God appears unto Abraham again. He's still called Abram at this point. Abram mentions to God he doesn't have his own children yet, and there's a servant in his house that would be his designated heir, and God tells him, no, you're going to have your own child. You're going to have a son. It's going to come from you. And he takes him abroad and shows him the stars of heaven and says, see if you can number the stars or tell the stars, which would be not only the number of them, but the significance of them. And he believed in the Lord, it says in verse 6, and he counted it to him for righteousness. And in verse 7, he said unto him, I am the Lord that brought thee out of Ur of the Chaldees to give thee this land to inherit it. And he said, Lord God, whereby shall I know that I shall inherit it? And God had him kill some animals and divide them in half, and he did some special effects for him, indicating that he was making a solemn covenant with him. And we're going to pick this up in verse 18. It says, in the same day the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, unto thy seed have I given this land, from the river of Egypt unto the great river, the river Euphrates. Told him what the boundaries were going to be. The Kenites, the Kenizzites, the Cabanites, the Hittites, and the Perizzites, and the Rephaims, and the Amorites, and the Canaanites, and the Girgashites, and the Jebusites. So he defines the territory for him. But I want to back up a little bit because there's some more information in there. Look at verse 13. And he said unto Abram, know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. And also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge, and afterward they shall come out with great substance. Okay? So I looked at Bullinger's notes for a little help with this one, because I knew that the people did not live in Egypt for a full 400 years. He said that 400 years that he's talking about would begin with the birth of Isaac, because that would be his seed, okay? From the time Isaac was born to the time that the children of Israel would leave Egypt would be 400 years. Now, during that time, there's a period of time where they're going to be slaves and be afflicted, okay? Bullinger says they dwelled in Egypt for a period of 215 years, okay? And they weren't slaves the whole time that they were there, because Joseph was 30 years old when he began to be second in command over Egypt, and he lived to be 110 years old. So for the first 80 years, Joseph was still alive, and they were very welcome there. And then after Joseph died, at some point, another pharaoh took over from a different dynasty that didn't have any appreciation for Joseph and what he had done. And it was at that point that they began to be slaves. Okay? So during that time, after Joseph had died and had been forgotten for a while until they left Egypt, they were slaves then. And it mentions the fourth generation in verse 16, but in the fourth generation shall they come hither again. I looked at the genealogy of Moses, and from Jacob, there were four additional generations to get to Moses, because Jacob had a son, Levi. Levi had a son named Kohath. Kohath had a son named Amram, and Amram was the father of Moses. So that's four generations after Jacob. Levi would have gone to Egypt with Jacob, because the whole family went there. And then you have, after Levi, Kohath and Amram, and then Moses. So that's four generations. And four generations aren't going to last a full 400 years, but in that 215-year period, you can have four generations, especially with Moses 80 years old at the time that the people left Egypt. Anyway, Let's go to Genesis chapter 26. In verse 1, it says, "And there was a famine in the land beside the first famine that was in the days of Abraham." So this happens when Isaac was an adult. "And Isaac went unto Abimelech, king of the Philistines, unto Gerar, and the Lord appeared unto him and said, Go not down into Egypt, dwell in the land which I shall tell thee of. Sojourn, or live as a stranger, resident alien, in this land, and I will be with thee and will bless thee. For unto thee, Isaac, and unto thy seed, I will give all these countries, and will perform the oath which I swear unto Abraham thy father. And I will make thy seed to multiply as the stars of heaven, and will give unto thy seed all these countries, and in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed." So Isaac had the blessing of Abraham and the promise of the land that he was in, okay? Which has a bearing on what Joseph is going to tell his family at the point that he's dying. So God promised it to Abraham several times, to Isaac, and then look at chapter 28. This is after the incident where Jacob disguised himself as Esau to get the blessing. At this point, Isaac knows it's Jacob. It says he calls him. Verse 1, "And Isaac called Jacob and blessed him on purpose, knowing that it's Jacob. Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him," or commanded him, "and said unto him, Thou shalt not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan. Arise, go to Paddan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, thy mother's father, and take thee a wife from thence of the daughters of Laban, thy mother's brother. And God Almighty bless thee, and make thee fruitful, and multiply thee, that thou mayest be a multitude of people, and give thee the blessing of Abraham, to thee and to thy seed with thee, that thou mayest inherit the land wherein thou art a stranger, which God gave unto Abraham." Okay? So knowing full well that it's Jacob, he blessed him with the blessing of Abraham, and that Jacob and his seed would inherit the land. This blessing came from God. So when Isaac is speaking and doing the blessing, he's getting the words from God. So Jacob is blessed and promised the land. A little farther down, and look at verse 12. Jacob's dream, when he was heading to Paddan Aram, to where his uncle Laban lived, he settled down for the night and he dreamed a dream. And this is a dream from God. Verse 12, "And he dreamed, and behold, a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven, and behold, the angels of God ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it, and said, I am the Lord, Jehovah, God of Abraham thy father, and the God of Isaac. The land whereon thou liest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed." So again, God personally, directly to Jacob, in a dream by revelation, promises him the land that he's lying upon. "And thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and thou shalt spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. And in thee, Jacob, and in thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed." The blessing of Abraham. "And behold, I am with thee, and will keep thee," will protect you, "in all the places whither thou goest, and will bring thee again into this land. For I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken to thee of." So wherever Jacob would go, God would be with him, protecting him, and would bring him back to this place. And Jacob awaked out of his sleep and said, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I knew it not." And he was afraid and said, "How dreadful or awesome is this place! This is none other but the house of God. This is the gate of heaven." And Jacob rose up early in the morning and took the stone that he had put for his pillows and set it up for a pillar and poured oil upon the top of it. He anointed it. And he called the name of that place Bethel, house of God. But the name of that city was called Luz at the first. And Jacob vowed a vow, saying, "If God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat and raiment to put on, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then shall the Lord be my God, And this stone which I have set for a pillar shall be God's house. And of all that thou shalt give me, I will surely give the tenth unto thee. And he kept that word. And so did his descendants after him. God required it of them. So let's go to chapter 35. This is more than 20 years later now. Jacob had made it to Laban's house, married his daughters, had a lot of children. And after 20 years, he comes back out of there and comes back to this place. And God specifically tells him to go back to Bethel, which had been called Luz. And I'm going to start in verse 6. So Jacob came to Luz, which is in the land of Canaan, that is Bethel, he and all the people that were with him. And he built there an altar and called the place El Bethel, means God, the God of the house of God, because there God had appeared unto him when he fled from the face of his brother. And then Deborah, Rebekah's nurse, dies at that point. They bury her. But in verse 9 it says, And God appeared unto Jacob again when he came out of Paddan Aram and blessed him. And God said unto him, Thy name is Jacob. Thy name shall not be called any more Jacob, but Israel shall be thy name. And he called his name Israel. And God said unto him, I am God Almighty. It's El Shaddai. Be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall be of thee, and kings shall come out of thy loins. And the land which I gave Abraham and Isaac, to thee I will give it, and to thy seed after thee will I give the land. And he woke up from that, and he poured oil on another pillar at that point. But again, God makes all these promises about the land. It's a big deal to God. It's important to God. And he wanted it to be important to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, and to those that would descend after him. He made a covenant with Abraham regarding this. See, when someone's seeking God's will, there are things that God will have that person do and speak of that are greater than that person's own lifespan, okay? God had an ultimate plan, and these were playing key parts in it, but the ultimate plan would go beyond their natural lifetime. But because they were men that sought God, they were willing to commit themselves to something that they wouldn't see before they would die, which is pretty cool when you think about it. That is a great commitment. Now, they would have had the knowledge that they would be raised again from the dead at some point. But for most people, they're only concerned with their own life. They're only concerned with what they can get out of things. They're only concerned about either their survival, their prosperity, their pleasure, their avoidance of pain, everything that they can get out of life before they die. But these men, they were seeking the will of God and were willing to commit themselves to God's overall plan because God's around forever. A person's lifespan, even if it's over 100 years, is short to God. But these men were willing to commit to that. And I just think that's great. Now, chapter 37, this is when Joseph comes into the picture. Now, again, we saw that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were prophets. God spoke to them. They spoke with God, and they spoke to other people on God's behalf. Among the children of Jacob, the only one that is documented as a prophet, one that God spoke to directly and that would speak for God, was Joseph. I've looked through all the records. I don't see that with any of the other brothers of Joseph. He's the only one that I could identify as one that had the Spirit of God upon him, and that was a prophet that received revelation and spoke for God. Let's read a little about him here. In verse 1, it says, And Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, the handmaidens of Leah and Rachel. And Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. So he tattled on them. They weren't doing what was right. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors. as we saw last week. He was the designated chief heir of the family, as Reuben should have been, but he was disqualified, and so were a number of his other brothers. So Jacob just chose Joseph to be his chief heir, as if he were the firstborn. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. And Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told it his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. And he said unto them, "Hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. And behold, your sheaves stood round about and made obeisance to my sheaf." And his brethren said to him, "Shalt thou indeed reign over us?" That's their little brother saying this. And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. And he dreamed yet another dream, and told it his brethren, and said, "Behold, I have dreamed a dream more. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me." And he told it to his father and to his brethren. And his father rebuked him and said unto him, "What is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth?" And his brethren envied him, but his father observed the saying. Jacob recognized that these dreams are actually from God, and I'm going to look and see if they come to pass. He remembered them. And then after this is when the brothers gang up on him and they sell him as a slave, and he goes down into Egypt. Okay, I'm not going to read the whole record about that to save a little time, but we're going to pick it up in chapter 39. So while he's in Egypt, he is brought to Potiphar. Potiphar buys him as a slave, and we'll see what happens here. And Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man as a slave. But he was a prosperous man. He was educated. He had the Spirit of God on him. He didn't try to run away. He just did his best to serve his master. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. Joseph must have spoken for God and let people know that he worshiped the God that created the heavens and the earth, and that he was the God of Abraham and of Isaac and his father Jacob. And people could see that everything he did went well. Potiphar made him overseer of the house. In verse 4, Joseph found grace in Potiphar's sight, and he served him and made him overseer of his house. And all that he had, he put into his hand, because he knew he could trust him. And nothing would get wasted. He's not going to embezzle the money. He's not going to mistreat people. He's going to make sure that everybody's cared for well. And he recognized that God was with him, that God was in this. And it came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, that the Lord, Jehovah, blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught he had save the bread which he did eat. Means he didn't have to worry about a thing. Let Joseph take care of it. He had his food to eat and his other work to do, and everything was great. And Joseph was a goodly person, well favored. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said unto his master's wife, "Behold, my master wotteth not, he doesn't know what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" He said, "I cannot do what you're asking me to do. It would be a sin against God." But she persisted, and there was a day that she grabbed him. He took off and left his coat in her hand, and she took that as evidence to say, "Oh, he tried to attack me and tried to lie with me." And the master of the house, Potiphar, believed his wife and put Joseph in jail. While he was in jail, the jailer put Joseph in charge of all the other prisoners because he could see that he was a good guy and conscientious and a good worker and worked well with people. And he let Joseph do all the organizing of the prisoners. And he took care of them. And he had an opportunity one day where the king's butler and baker were both in jail. They had made the king mad for some reason. And they both had a dream the same night. And Joseph, by revelation, interpreted the dreams for the butler and the baker. And the things that he said would happen did happen. The baker got his head chopped off. The butler had his position restored to him. And he told the butler, remember me to Pharaoh. Get me out of this place because I was falsely accused. I'm in here and I really shouldn't be. But the butler forgot about him for 2 years until Pharaoh has these two dreams about the cows and about the corn. And he doesn't know what they mean, but he knows that they're very significant and they disturb him. And he asks all his wise men if they can interpret the dreams for him, and nobody's able to do that. But the butler says, I know a guy who interpreted a dream for me and for your baker. And he told us what the dream meant and what was going to happen. And it happened just the way he said it. So this guy knows what he's doing when he interprets dreams. So Pharaoh says, we'll get him right away. And we'll pick it up in verse 14. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him hastily out of the dungeon. And he shaved himself and changed his raiment and came in unto Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret it. And I've heard say of thee that thou canst understand a dream to interpret it. And Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me. So I don't have the ability to just understand a dream. But God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. See, what I do is I just ask God what it means, and he tells me, and then I can tell you. So God is going to give you an answer of peace. So Pharaoh tells Joseph all about the dreams, about the cows, the skinny cows that eat the fat cows, and the skinny ears of corn that eat the fat ears of corn. And we'll go down to verse 25, and here's what Joseph says after Pharaoh's done telling him the dreams. Joseph said unto Pharaoh, the dream of Pharaoh is one. God hath showed Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good kine, those are cows, are 7 years. And the seven good ears of corn, are 7 years. The dream is one. And the seven thin and ill-favored kine that came up after them are 7 years. And the seven empty ears blasted with the east wind shall be 7 years of famine. This is the thing which I have spoken unto Pharaoh. What God is about to do, he showeth unto Pharaoh. He didn't say, I'm showing it to you. He said, God is showing you what is going to happen over the next, actually 14 years, right? Behold, there come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt, and there shall arise after them 7 years of famine. And all the plenty shall be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine shall consume the land. And the plenty shall not be known in the land by reason of that famine following, for it shall be very grievous. And for that the dream was doubled unto Pharaoh twice. It is because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. Now therefore let Pharaoh look out a man discreet and wise, and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint officers over the land, and take up the fifth part of the land of Egypt in the seven plenteous years, and let them gather all the food of those good years that come, and lay up corn under the hand of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities. And that food shall be for store to the land against the 7 years of famine, which shall be in the land of Egypt, that the land perish not through the famine. And the thing was good in the eyes of Pharaoh, and in the eyes of all his servants. And Pharaoh said unto his servants, can we find such a one as this? A man in whom the Spirit of God is. What a great statement. See, this is how the word of the Lord proved him. When God gave Joseph his word, and Joseph related that to first the butler and the baker and then to Pharaoh, that proved to the others that Joseph was a man of God, that Joseph could receive that valuable information of God and be wise because God would tell him what to do and he would do what God would say. And Pharaoh was one that appreciated this. Can we find such a one as this, a man in whom the Spirit of God is? And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, Forasmuch as God hath showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house, and according to thy word shall all my people be ruled, only in the throne will I be greater than thou. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, See, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt. And he gave him his signet ring and gave him the authority. So Joseph was not only able to help the whole land of Egypt and the whole kingdom, but he was now in a position to help his own family. And God had this all arranged. To protect the family, they could come down to Egypt. Joseph would take care of them. I'm not going to read all the records of all the drama that went on in the meantime, but God arranged that. And we're going to pick this up in chapter 48 now, when it comes to the land and the promises of God. In chapter 48, in verse 21, it says, And Israel, that's Jacob, said unto Joseph, Behold, I die. And so I'm dying now. I only have a little bit of time left. But God shall be with you, and that's all of you, the whole family, and bring you again into the land of your fathers. So Israel, Jacob said that personally to Joseph. So he had that in his heart, and he knew that was from God. And let's go to chapter 50 now, the promise of the land and leaving Egypt and going to inhabit that land. Chapter 50, this is after Jacob blessed all his children, and then he died, and Joseph had him buried in the place that Jacob told him to bury him. In the land of Canaan. And in verse 24, this is the incident that Hebrews 11:22 was referring to. And Joseph said unto his brethren, I die. Now Joseph was 17 years old when he was sold as a slave. He was 30 years old when he became second in command of all of Egypt. He lived to be 110 years old. So the family had been in Egypt now for 80 years at this point, and they've had children and grandchildren, and a lot has happened here. But he said to his brethren, I die, and God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land unto the land which he sware to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. And Joseph took an oath of the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and ye shall carry up my bones from hence. So Joseph died, being 110 years old, and they embalmed him and put him in a coffin in Egypt. So at the point that he said this, that God will visit you and bring you out of this land into the land that he sware to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, there was nothing in the senses realm that told him or anybody else that there would even be a need to leave Egypt. They had been there at this point for 80 years, and they were doing great. Everybody loved Joseph there. He had saved the whole nation, and he was an elder at that point, and everybody loved him. He didn't say this because of looking around and seeing what was going on and seeing if there were any indicators that trouble was on the horizon. He said this because God told him to say it. He knew that God had promised the land of Canaan to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. And then Jacob told him, you're going to leave this place and you're going to settle in the land where we were. So Joseph knew this. And at the point where he's about to die, God's telling him what to say to his family. You see? And he's saying what God tells him to say. I know that because he said it by faith, by believing. Believing is believing what you're told by God. Okay? It's not just, I believe this is going to happen. He believed it because God said so. That's the essence of what believing God is. So he said, God will surely visit you. Make sure you understand that. And God will bring you out of this land unto the land which he sware to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob. And he took an oath, say, you swear to me that when this happens, it would be like maybe 145 years later that it would happen. The people that he's speaking to would be dead by that point, so that they would have to make sure that this information would be communicated to the next generation and the next generation and the next generation and maybe the next generation, you see? But he took an oath saying, carry up my bones from hence. And if you look at Exodus chapter 13, verse 19, as the people are leaving Egypt following the Passover, right before they get to the Red Sea, Exodus 13:19 says, and Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, for he had straitly sworn the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and ye shall carry up my bones away hence with you. So even though it was 145 years after he said it, they had to remember that. They had to tell their children, whoever is in charge, when we leave Egypt, make sure you bring Joseph's bones. And in Joshua chapter 24, it mentions this again. Joshua chapter 24, and this is the end of Joshua's life, where he says, as for me and my house, we shall serve the Lord. That's in this chapter. But in verse 32, it says, and the bones of Joseph, which the children of Israel brought out of Egypt, buried they in Shechem, in a parcel of ground, which Jacob bought of the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, for 100 pieces of silver. And it became the inheritance of the children of Joseph. Remember, Shechem was that guy that fell in love with Dinah and had defiled her. And they said, well, you have to get circumcised if you want to marry our sister. And then Levi and Simeon killed Shechem and all the males in that city and took all their stuff. But Joseph had made that purchase before that happened. So he had purchased a parcel of ground. That's the only parcel of ground that Jacob owned in the Promised Land, and he paid for it. But when they left Egypt hundreds of years later, they took Joseph's bones and they buried Joseph's bones in that parcel of ground. So what we read in Hebrews 11:22 will hopefully have a greater significance to you now with all the background, because here's a man that loved God. Here's a man that was a prophet, that had the Spirit of God upon him, that was mistreated by his brothers. Remember, Jesus Christ said a prophet is not without honor except in his own country and in his own house. Joseph was one that was a prophet, but being the little brother, you know, his dad was a prophet, his brothers were not. They didn't like him, and they mistreated him, sold him as a slave, but he turned around and did them all good. You know, he did the will of God for them. He didn't go on his feelings and just say, well, I'm going to get you for what you did to me. They were worried that he might do that, but he just forgave them. He forgave them all because he was more interested in doing the will of God. That's why Joseph is listed in this chapter in Hebrews 11 among the others that were diligently seeking God and did what they did by believing, which is a good example for all of us. All right, so that's all for tonight, and next week we'll start looking at Moses. Okay, so God bless everybody, and we'll see you next week.